Okay, we have title research, Marshall Frank next, and we're going to be passing out some pamphlets for you.
Thank you.
Hello.
Good morning. Not all of you have a handout. I have more copies, so if you need it, no problem at all. We'll make more. What we always say about title as well is, you don't have the deeds that you need, you can just generate them. My name is Marshall Frank. I'll tell you a little instant history. Started off as a real estate man in the 70s for my father and his father's real estate firm. I went into title because I needed a cut in pay. And it was substantial, it was 30%. But I happen to like title, I like mapping a ton, and I like engineers, and I like surveyors, so it was the way to go, and besides that, interest rates were at 21% at that time. So it seemed like a thing to do. I examined land titles and became subdivision title officer in Santa Clara County for 12 years. And then, because of amour and love, moved up to Contra Costa County, whereupon there was the earthquake, which happened in 1989. And when it did, I was contracted to do the title research, to do whatever it took to substantiate replacement of the superstructure. And all 246 separate title searches, all interlocking, and there were supposed to be no gaps and bores between, so that was took me 2 years to do. After I finished with that, they decided they didn't want that search. They wanted another area over the Open Army base, and all of that work was deemed useless. So you kind of win for losing. But they did become an expert, though, on certain kinds of title exams, large super projects. So just to rattle them off, Sun Valley Mall, all Macy's, Point Mulati, Concord Naval Weapons Station, Buchanan Airport, and this hotel. And now I work as a consultant in the for basically supplying information to legal counsel for title companies who have, the title industry itself has sort of imploded. And unfortunately, when that happened, most of their information imploded with it. And of most of the information that comes from title companies now has been kind of regurgitated, and a lot of it is offshore. Good luck reading that pre. It's just tough. And in some cases, it's meaningless. It's garbage. I mean, it says whatever the title companies need to protect themselves, but it doesn't really help thee or me or anyone else to understand what it is that they do anymore. And I can get into that, but I don't think I'll have the time, so we'll just get into that. But I now act as a technical consultant, primarily for utilities, some public agencies here in Contra Costa. I also work in San Francisco doing research for very, very large solar farms. I was an environmental science major actually in college. And those are highly articulated, and what we found is that most title companies are not up to the challenge anymore of big projects. Their attorneys are, their underwriters are. But not their line examiners, not their line, you know, mapping people who understood descriptions well enough to say, yes, this is a risk, no, this isn't. So they bring me in to do actually forensic re-examination of the existing title reports such as they are, and then to fix the problems before they actually sign on the dotted line. And this becomes a very large project. One of my expertise that I've developed sort of through the years is understanding a lot of, I don't want to say that I understand law, but I understand a lot of the recording information and systems that were used prior to the world of official records, which I think we're all probably well aware of. Official records happened approximately, the law court that is, it happened approximately June of 1920. And before that time, if you wanted to find a conveyance of property that may or may not be a deed, you had to look in a minimum of 22 places. There was, as we all know, there's the Book of Deeds, but there was also the Book of Agreements. There was the Book of Covenants. There was the Book of Water, which I'm usually contracted to find out about water rights or solar farms, because they don't want anybody going in there drilling for water in the top of 100 acres of PV panels. That happens, I do that on a daily basis. I look for that sort of thing. Water rights in particular, oil and gas. And then I look also for egregious examining errors, which are rife in the industry now. So on we go. Anyway, there's also the Book of Women's Chattels, where private holdings of women were allowed to be held by them before the age of women's suffrage. But it had to be posted in a book that was mandated by the state of California. And this was their idea. So anyway, after a while, it got to, in Contra Costa County, I think they got up to something like 35 separate books that you had to do. Minimum was 22, but they could add on anything they liked, depending upon which county they were in and the problems they had. So fast forward to 1920, they said, this is ridiculous here. We can't have people looking in 25 places or 30 places to find all of the information that we need to do our business, because if an easement wasn't a fee, what do you do? Well, it may be in the Book of Agreements, it may be in the Book of Miscellaneous. All of you are probably aware of a lot of these things, but you don't see them that often. I see them all the time. In fact, most of the documents I look at are still handwritten, because that's where the action is in terms of risk. And my job is to mitigate the risk for very, very large properties. And you know, the day-to-day risks, well taken care of. Houses, not a problem. When you start getting into complex articulated properties where there's literally 3,000 documents, separate documents, that you have to look through to understand all of the cadastral and boundary issues have to do with Contra Naval Weapons Station, title companies are not up to the challenge anymore. So they bring me in as a consultant or as an adjunct or ancillary examiner or whatever they need. I charge them twice as much. It works well. Well, anyway, I just wanted to do a little bit here regarding methods that you can use that may help some of you. I assume most of you are mappers and involved with mapping. Well, my expertise is not so much in the newfangled stuff, but in the stuff that predates Parcel Map Act, sometimes Subdivision Map Act, or different forms of it. And it's the world as it existed really before, let's say, 1972 at the best. Because that's where the descriptions really became kind of Wild West stuff here, and there was really a difficulty in understanding where do you go to get the information when you're missing a stinking deed. Do you go forward? Do you go backwards? Do you look at your historical maps? And the answer is simply all of them. And you take the best from every single one of them, cherry pick them. Not all of them are public record. And all of them have flaws. And all of them are better if you look at the combined information that's being done, cast out the bad stuff. You know, there's some stuff is ridiculous, some stuff has been garbled. Lots of information has been just plain garbled that you need. And usually you can get it, but only after a fashion. And sometimes nowadays, of course, that information is just dying a natural death due to the digital world. So what do? Well, I just wanted to give a couple of techniques that I've used and I use on a daily basis, because I deal almost all exclusively with old descriptions that predate mapping. Although I was a subdivision title officer, I understand mapping pretty well for recorded maps, but that's not always where, you know, the information lies that you need to do to substantiate a chain of title. And my job, I have to establish a chain of title. Not always from tip to tail, but for photovoltaics, for example, I usually examine all the way back to usually it's Ulysses Grant. So anyway, not all of you have my handout. That's all right. You don't really need it. Just destroy the mouse. But let me just give you some definitions that will help you. And then this is really more of a mental exercise than one where you need to follow along. I'll give this to anybody who wants it, though. What I'm reading is what I'll give to you, so that you can kind of cogitate on this stuff at a later time. Some of the terms I use, PIQ means the property in question. That's exactly the fee that we are handling now. That's the property that's being searched, whether it's a fee or it's going to be a leasehold. still need to search it basically as though it's a fee until it is created. And so, for example, you can't have an airport here, okay? It actually was 24 separate, ended up being 24 separate parcels, although it started off being the Concord Aerodrome, and I believe it was the 20s, about the time of Lindbergh. This was a part of the original Air Express, if I recall, that he was trying to set up. Okay, let me tell you, there's commonly behind 1972 and really further back than that, you'll have large parcels that break up, and they break up in kind of funny ways. We call those mother parcels because they actually just, they start off this way and then they bust up in many ways, but they actually have the same lineage up to the point where they break apart. I'm talking fees mainly. Sister parcels are the children of the mother parcels. They're the ones that break apart, and how they break apart and what references they put on those becomes, is not only critical to the description being correct, but it's also highly useful and structured in such a way that you can really mine a lot of information out of it. I've worked up and tried to gather every technique that I can find that works in the state of California. I found that 80% of the techniques that I've used are county specific. So that means that a lot of this information will put most of you to sleep because it will work only in one county because it's different in every county. But it's not entirely different. There's different methods will work in each county, but there are overriding methods that work in all counties because basically the law is the same in any part of the state. But how it was administered in each recording system, of course, changes. And I've made cheat sheets in a few of the counties because I specialize basically in the Bay Area, but I do searches, I've done searches all over the United States. But my specialty, of course, is this area here where I can actually travel to archives. Most of the time the recorders, but sometimes non-record archives. And I look at information, try and gather them, the information, and see how it concurs with the record. And I think that's a useful technique that, consider to use if you just get stuck with, well, I need to have this, where was this canal made? Doggone it. Or where was the leftover piece on the far side of the canal? Where would it have come from? And of course, the short answer on that is, who granted the canal? Because when the canal was granted, at that point in time, let's say it was 1938, which is likely if it's United States Bureau of Reclamation, at that point in time, you can actually go forward and find where it is that canal will probably be generated. And I've made lists, for example, of all of the canals as they existed in Contra Costa County. And found that information is unbelievably useful because it gives you a snapshot of all of the owners, really for continuous strips of utilities that help you to understand who owns the property on either side of those utilities. Commonly, utilities are old. My specialty is railroads. I was trained by a railroad man. I've been working for 3 years, and it's supposed to close tomorrow, a 32-mile stretch of railroad in Santa Cruz County. And it went through 5 different railroads and ended up in Union Pacific. Now it's going to become owned by the Santa Cruz County Regional Transportation Commission. So it's searching that out. All 140 parcels of that has been a long process. But the thing that I've been able to do the best is understand, I play all of the information off of each other. So if you have information, let's say from a VAL map, if you know what that is, a VAL map, the VAL map will tell you who granted the property, let's say in 1903. Then that means that you then pull that document, grantee backwards on the grantor of that property. I'm sorry for using some of these terms, but I'm assuming that most of you know what grantoring and granting is. I grantee backwards from the owner of 1903, find the overriding property as it existed, then I can begin to examine it out and chain forward. But it's the substantiation of the beginning points that is difficult, and that's the techniques that title companies and title men have trained themselves through the years. Of course, the bad news about railroads in Santa Cruz County is that the information, good as it is, was stored in San Francisco. And in San Francisco in 1906, everything burned to the ground, including all of the information, deed information, for Santa Cruz railroads. So in a lot of cases, it exists, but it does not exist in the knowledge of Southern Pacific Railroad. So you actually have to go to the recorder. Sometimes there is no choice. You have to go to the recorder, get the information. It's there if the information hasn't been destroyed. In San Francisco, it was destroyed. and they actually had to get McInerney adjudications, which would create, by the bang of a gavel, they created a new law in 1906 that basically said if you can substantiate you own the property, we will, by a bang of the gavel, indicate that you own that property now and forever, and titles can now begin from 1906 forward. And that's exactly what's done. To this day, there's a bank about this large of books in San Francisco available to the public of nothing called but McInerney judgments. And it's basically a map book, very old, and it shows the recording information of every McInerney judgment ever rendered. Pretty neat. They still, to this day, actually are rendering new McInerney judgments, usually for chunks of streets. Streets, God help us all, right? Well, let's move on. So just understand, when you get stuck, grantee is no fun. It's like a root canal. No, it's not that much fun. But it is going to work. It should give you the answer, with very few exceptions. And I'll rattle off the exceptions because they're just worth knowing because they very rarely apply. One of them is tax deeds, interestingly. Tax deeds are sometimes ones that are not indexed well by the county recorder or at all because the names don't show correctly. And sometimes those are considered uninsurable. Most title companies will insure them only after a curing of time and they found that no one really is laying claim to it. It is an issue when it comes down to slivers, tiny little chunks of land that nobody wants, and they go up for auction and they get lost in the shuffle and the state isn't interested and no one else is, so they get sold for $10. So that does work, and that's worth knowing. So let me just tell you that the systems that I use that will help, that I think will help you as well. I'm probably running out of time. The recording systems, the knowledge of the recording systems and how they are put together and when they're put together will help a lot. As we know, for example, official records came in, but they came in at a different point in every county in the state of California. This county, it was, I think it was June of 1925. Solano County was 1927. Alameda County, it was 1921. Fresno County, 1920. Smaller counties sometimes actually responded faster because they had less baggage and there was actually less movement, so it was easy for them to shift over the recording systems into the official records, which were mandated by law, but not their implementation, just the law itself. Official maps. Official maps I'm talking about are area maps which show who owned the property as a relatively famous point in time. We use those as gold sometimes to give us a point where we can begin to go forward, even if the name isn't correct, usually the shape is. That's important because then once we can have something to latch on to and not just say, oh my God, I have to grand tour Southern Pacific going back 60 years. Well, that's a good way to lose your hair like I'm doing here. We find that official maps are very good. What we do is we play official maps against each other. We overlay them. This will be very good for in the age of GIS, I think. So we have 1894 maps. We have the assessor Contra Costa County has a 1918 map. There's a 1938 map, there's a 1952 map. Commonly, they'll be done, rendered every 20, 30 years, depending upon the need. I don't think they do that practice very much anymore, and nor is it probably nearly necessary. But it does help because you understand what the property looked like, and what it came out of in terms of its shape a long time ago. Very, very useful, because then you have something to grab onto. Also, if you have searches that are next door to yours, very, very useful. In fact, in most cases, if you have a full chain, let's say, on a piece of property, but you're searching the property next door, well, most likely, that chain will apply to your property as well, but only to the point in time where the properties broke apart, descriptively, along the boundary deed, on what we would call the sister line. Very, very useful. Don't know if it's useful here because how often do you have a full chain of title? Well, I'm here to tell you that you don't always need a full chain of title. If you have a good point where you could start and you feel comfortable with it, it may help you to understand who the bestie was and how it came to be shaped the way it is, which is, I think, you know, to me, where the action is. Deed ties. on old properties described by meets and bounds, the deed ties, the first deed that came out of a larger parcel will never be there because it's the first. Makes sense, but you don't think about that. It's the very first. So that means that if you're interested in a piece of property and it has no deed tie, well, maybe it was the first one out of the mother parcel there, and that's, you have no idea when it actually recorded, let's say. Sometimes you just have a description that you have to try and locate out. Best thing you can do, find the sister parcels. Hold them instantly. Look specifically at the call that abuts yours. 90% of the time in the old meets and bounds descriptions, you will find a deed reference on one side or the other. If there is no deed reference, then it's probably the first one, and that means that it would be, by definition, it's going to be the senior deed, senior lines. That's an important thing in our business because we need to know which lines are junior and which are senior and how they were created and when, because that tells us whether a description is insurable or if there's a row about which call is correct or it's been garbled through the years. We need to find out which one was right. So what we instantly do is we always pull the abutting lands, the abutting deed, on the most recent call we can usually find in the description, the most recent call, because that's going to be generally the sister line, the boundary call that really will give the most information. If it is later, like I say, 90% of the time it's going to show the reference to the missing deed that you're looking for. That will help you. That gives you a starting point. That gives you a point where you now know who the owner is. Very, very useful stuff. If there's no call, if there's no reference on either side, it happens a lot, especially nowadays. That doesn't mean you're dead. It just means that the call had better be correct. It usually means that the descriptions for abutting lands that are sister properties, this predates the Parcel Map Act, obviously, but this means that those descriptions go back to a point in time where they were probably generated by the same author, same person who drew it, not by different, not piecemeal as they were developed out. They were developed by one guy, and they were sometimes put into a repository and recorded at the point in time where they actually had a buyer on the property. Like I say, it's not a big deal either way, but it's the exception and not the rule. And it happens often enough where it's always valuable to use abutting deeds. In fact, I pull them on all sides, but I always identify which ones are really the most recent, because usually those are the ones that will give me the exact description of what it is that I'm looking at that point in time. It's a great big deal. Am I putting you all asleep?
No.
Hope not. There are, I would guess, 35, maybe 40 techniques that one can use. They're not all in here because it's too long, too arcane, and too short a period of time, too uninteresting, frankly, for a meeting like this. But there are many techniques. They usually have to do with other information that you can find out. Let me think of another one I can use. So you have a piece of a strip. I should have a visual for this, but I don't. I have actually, I did make a visual at the very end of the packet. Remember, everybody gets one of these. I threw a dart, and the subdivision that I hit was the one that shows in the package here. And I just wanted to see how much information I could get, but with no other technique than just using the current deeds. So like I say, this was one that was chosen at random, pulled all of the current deeds, looked at all of the legal descriptions, and then what I did is I parsed the legal descriptions themselves for what information I could get out of those that would tell me what was the initial deed where these descriptions were created. Because that's what kind of I'm here to talk about today. How can you find a creation point specifically from a current deed? So as you can see, I wrote the information of the current deeds on all of these properties here. And from that, I tried to go directly to the deeds themselves, and I wrote on the deeds what logic I was using to find boundary deeds, boundary information, the common owner. And it worked pretty well, actually surprisingly well, because sometimes it doesn't. But usually, I would say 90% of the time, maybe 95, it is helpful and worth doing. The I can give you a call. Here's one that I can think of just offhand. If you have a call, you're going general northeasterly line, let's say, and you come to the northerly boundary of a property, and they give a reference to it, and then it begins to traverse off one way or the other, you probably reach what they call a T line, where it goes up to one point, but it's actually T-ing at the top. Well, a T line, the geometry of it, tells you quite a lot, because, like I said, this will work about 90% of the time, not 100, but at least 90% of the time. When you T up to the top, and you're actually, if you were going north, and you T to the northerly line of a property, well, that property, almost by definition, will actually include your property. Now, I don't know if that's intuitively obvious or not, but that document, of course you pull it because it's a reference, you probably need to pull it as a matter of course. But let me tell you, that document has about a 95, 98% chance of hitting your land. And it's probably going to be what they call the mother parcel, so it's going to include more land than yours. But now you have a reference. Now you know something that you can grab onto, you can grantor forward from that, and find the breakout of your property. And of course, once you begin to have ties, well, the references to those ties will be shown in the most recent sister properties that come out of your mother parcel. So depending upon what you're searching for here, like I say, I tried to just divine all the information I could only from the current deeds, nothing else. And I was able to find the description of the property more or less as it existed in about 1940, let's say. The common owner, because the common owner was shown as being the northerly terminus, or excuse me, the northerly line of a property that had been going in the northerly direction. Doesn't matter what your direction is, if it's going to the northerly line of it, it actually is going to include your property. Very important to know. But using that information, I was then able to, I could have grantored forward and found all these references. Most of these references, I didn't have to, because they were actually shown as side references in each other. First deed that comes out of a mother parcel will never have a sister reference. It can't, but it will have usually referred to the mother parcel, so it's not unworthwhile to have. The last deed will not. It will have references all on the side, but it will never have anything referred to it because it's the last. Logical. But if you're trying to establish all four of them, now you know who the common owner is, and you've basically got enough information to divine where that's where we start in the title industry. We want to figure out what the sequence of deeds were out of the common parcel, so we can figure out whether the easements, the private easements, were insurable. It's the biggest loss we have, is that and probably that tax amounts, misrepresented taxes. So we have to figure this stuff out every single time we're doing any search that involves a private utility, private driveway or whatever. And of course, nowadays, those are handled much differently. They have driveway agreements and reciprocation things and such. But before the age of modern age, it was basically grants and reservations. Another clue that you have, the first deed out, look for a reservation. Sounds obvious to some of us, I'm sure. If you don't have a reservation, generally speaking, it is not going to be the first deed out. So look for that reservation, that if you have any property that has a private right-of-way or a part of a larger common area, that reservation is going to be the indication that's going to be there. Now, here's an obvious one. The assessor's parcel number. If you have the first deed out, the assessor's parcel number will always be wrong, because it hasn't been reassessed yet. It hasn't been remapped into the new configuration, which is generally smaller. Generally, it's going to be a higher number, and it will be one number instead of two or three. So let those be clues. Because it'll save a lot. What you want to do is be efficient in how it is that you do research, so that you can spend your research juice on things that really make a difference, that really warrant your time, rather than say, well, no, I'll just search back another 30 years, and then, of course, you found nothing, and you wonder why. Well, better yet, well, let's see, now that deed, suddenly it has the same description as this one over here. However, the APNs have changed. In fact, there are more of them now. What happened? If the descriptions are the same, that usually tells you at the point in time where those descriptions are not the current description, the current APN, pardon me, that will be your first point where that description exists. Don't go any further back. Now you have to start Grantee-ing backwards, looking for wealthy properties. And just as a matter, just a, as a technical matter, title companies, experts in title, they usually don't grantor, they grantee. They go backwards, because it's actually faster. If you're establishing an entire chain going back to some point in time, let's say 1950 or whatever, for a number of reasons, they grantee backwards because it's faster, more accurate, and they can establish the chain quicker. Once they've done established the chain, then they start going forward and doing the things that are required for title insurance or whatever reason. But you know, when you're going actually to larger and larger parcels, it actually pays to not start with the large one and then look at the 10 deeds that might have come out of that large parcel into the smaller one, and it goes like this. And I've seen ones which will go through 20 separate parcels, each one slightly smaller than the next, each one given a separate assessor's number, each one given a separate description. It's a lot of stuff. It's much easier to go backwards to establish that same chain, especially if you have a beginning and a 1950 name to start with, and a 2012 name to start on, much easier to go backwards. Usually I'm starting in like 1970. So let's see, I'm about done. I'm sure you're falling asleep. Okay, title reports. Some of you people probably have never seen title reports, or not many. But some of you may see them all the time as a matter of course, so I just want to mention them in passing. A title report is an indication of what it is. The way they're viewed by title companies now, they're viewed as being an indication of those things that are possible claims for the title industry. Not, that's grand, except it kind of confuses the issue a little bit. The way the encumbrances are made, though, is they must look to see whether or not the person who owned the property at that point in time did something that basically diminishes his interest and gives it to someone else, whatever that interest is. Easement, lease, whatever. All of those things are supposed to show if the person owned the property. And if they didn't own the property, it shouldn't show. I point that out because sometimes you'll have a title report that will have 15 encumbrances. The one I was dealing with yesterday had 239. And it was a large property. And it was acquired in 20 parts. When a preliminary title report shows those 15 items, usually it'll say something, now in the new age they now say stuff like, in favor of. I don't know if they show that, but they'll say in favor of instead of granted by, reserved by. Well, ignore all of that stuff. Pull the documents. Look to see who executes it. The person that executes it generally is inferentially the person that owned the property at that point in time. So you can actually create a poor man's chain just directly from that. It will show you theoretically who owned all of that property, or at least some chunk of it, all the way back, theoretically, to 1841. Practical times? No, not necessarily. There had to be, if there was something they granted an easement in 1932 to Coast County's gas, well, we now know, of course, that's PG&E, but that means that they owned that property theoretically at that point in time, or they couldn't grant the easement. So pull all those documents, look at what they say and who granted them, not who is in favor of or who it was granted to. Look to see who executed the document. That will be theoretically, meaning that from that point, you can grantee backwards, find the grantee that hits your property under that name. It's called skip chaining, and sometimes you can go way back in time very quickly just by simply using a simple technique. Let's see, what else have I got? Am I about done? I think I'm about done. Oh, lot line adjustment. Oh, joy. Title companies hate lot line adjustments. Because they're almost by definition, they're twice as much work as a regular search. That means that they came from separate chains that somewhere in the dim dark past will end up in one spot. They had to end up in one spot, in theory. But that doesn't mean it was anytime soon, and they could be in conflicting or abutting ranchos. Oh my God. And the descriptions are different, the chains are different. There's not a whole lot about them that's the same. Twice as much work, and commonly they're not insured. Insurance is not the end of the world, but it means that there's a lot of work for a whole lot less gain. Title companies aren't that interested. This is one of the many reasons why title companies now don't give an ear to surveyors anymore. It's because surveyors want information that generally sort of a worst-case scenario of manpower. You know, it's not your average everyday search. It's not the ones that the surveyors are going to be working on. They'll be working on lot line adjustments. And so the title companies, as a result, have kind of said, no, we're kind of going to write them out of our business model a little bit. And I do more searching for surveyors directly, and sometimes they want insurance, and sometimes they want map information that abuts, but they can't get an ear from the title company because the title company say, no, we got money to make. Sorry, it's not fair. But the age of cooperation and free information from title companies, it's gone. And it's sad, but it has made me a new business, but it doesn't mean that it was the right way to go. And now it makes it that much more difficult, though, for you guys to do your business as well, because you can't. But how many of you have friends in the title industry that you don't anymore because they're gone? Most of them, or a lot of them. Well, in this county, I'm one of the few that's left, actually, that has been here for, I've only been here for 20 years, so I'm a new guy to this county. But I've been doing technical work for Kirk Robinson in this county for at least 20 years. He had title background, and he knew that I could help him, and he knew that I could we could all be helped. Uh-oh. So anyway, I think I'm pretty much done. I just want to tell you, here are the handouts that I have. This handout here is useless to anybody except in Contra Costa County. Just to help. However, I put it here because people have been clamoring for me to do this in Contra Costa County for years. And this is actually something that can help in its own way in any county. And that is, I have done a digest over the last 20 years of all the information I knew about just purely the way recording information is recorded in Contra Costa County. I have the top series number, for example, for every year going back to at least 1949, and actually further back, but it's not organized, so I don't have any. Now I bet you can hear me. That's not a bad thing to know, though, because sometimes you're only given a series number and nothing else in your recording information, and you say, well, when was that in that year? Or what book could it possibly be in? Well, there's a limited number of books that it can be in. And so sometimes if you have garbled information, it will help you very much simply to figure out what books it's possibly in. It may be such a small constraint compared to just looking at all of the books that recorded in that decade or whatever, that it's worth knowing. You can actually prorate a series number for a particular date. Interpolate, as we say, you know, where you're taking the number divided by 250 working days in the year, and actually get a very, very accurate idea sometimes of what the series number really might be, just simply from a date. Mm-hmm. And that is possible in every county I know, certainly in the 10 that I do the majority of my work in. So I wanted to include this simply to show that it can be done, and I have cheat sheets in a few counties, but I didn't want to, I certainly don't have them all of the counties of the state of California. But this can be done and is worth doing. Make your own little cheat sheets. Or eventually I'm going to write a book on this stuff here. Buy my book if you want. But in the meantime, no, seriously, I am. Because this is the idea of searching titles is becoming a lost art. How to do it well, anyway. Everybody can kind of sort of do it, but people are very hamstrung now, I think. By virtue of the power of the computers is really kind of emasculating people's ability to use these old techniques. If the risk is big enough, if the properties are expensive enough, if the land is weird enough, you still need these old techniques. They will work, but they're the exception, not the rule. So you need to know them, and you're the people, basically, that will probably be the keepers of the flame, maybe as much as even as the title companies. And I think I'm about done. Thank you so much.